build it, he will.
It's the Skinny on Sports Podcast with Aaron Dowd.
I throw balls far. You want good words? Data language.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Calc with the Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Good Monday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to the Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, the Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. Just be me this week. Jared's out on an adventure to Colorado. And so just me in the chair all week long. Great time of the year as the NCAA tournament brackets were announced last night. We can dive into those, dig through them for a few days leading up into the official first round on Thursday and Friday, but of course we've got some play-in games coming up tomorrow and Wednesday. So lots and lots and lots of bracket talk today. Also, what a great weekend it was down at Ponte Vedra Beach, Florida. The Players' Championship lived up to the hype. Just a fantastic day yesterday. That last hour or so as Scotty Scheffler was trying to steer it into the clubhouse with the lead and all the rest of those guys were trying to catch him. It was just great theater, so we can talk about that as well. And whatever else might be on your mind, feel free to chime right in at 225-9698. That is 225-9698. Give us a call, shoot us a text at that number. We're talking about any of those things or whatever else might be on your mind. Feel free to chime right in at 225-9698. Yeah, thank you, Sam. Turn on the record button. I actually already did that as soon as I walked into the studio. I hit the record button. At least today we will have a podcast, and so that's a, I appreciate the heads up, because let's be honest, that's about the worst thing I am on here, is remembering to create a podcast with a record button when Jared is away. If you're going to be outside the listening area one of these days, you can stay in touch with the show a couple of ways. Log on to kadsam.com or download the app. The app's got it all. It's got the radio. It's got the Penny News, brand new edition of the Penny News. Always hits the website Tuesday night at midnight. And then, of course, pick up a free copy of the Penny News. Some places Wednesday by Thursday morning. It's everywhere. During the high school sports season, when it's rolling, the Big Elk TV, Paragon TV, you can watch the games there. And, of course, now we've got the Skinny on Sports podcast for today. Pick up, you can go check that out anywhere where podcasts, where you find them, where they drop, anywhere. That's where we shall be. How was everybody's weekend? You could feel, you could see everything starting to turn as far as the trees are starting to bloom. There's some grass, some green grass starting to sprout out. That always signals to me that it is March Madness. It's basketball, college basketball, 3 weeks of tournament that leads right into the Masters starting as well, and that's the official start of spring in my mind, is when you get to look down at Augusta and see the azaleas in bloom and the green jacket being competed for. So yesterday, Selection Sunday, bad day for the state of Oklahoma as far as the suitors. You know, when chaos started Saturday in a lot of those conference tournament finals, NC State, it just went throughout the evening hours, kind of, that's when you started to wonder, okay, you know, even on Friday, I would have told you that Oklahoma's comfortably in the tournament. It would have to be absolute chaos in order for the Sooners not to earn an at-large bid into the NCAA tournament. Well, that's exactly what we saw on Saturday, to a level that is almost historic as far as teams that basically stole at-large bids away from others by winning conference tournaments, teams that had zero shot to make the big tournament without winning their conference tournament. And you saw it happen four or five times throughout the entirety of tournament week, and especially there on Saturday. And judging by what we saw yesterday, once the brackets were released, then they showed the first four out, and Oklahoma is the first team out of the tournament. That tells you that they were comfortably in going into tournament week. They were comfortably in the tournament until chaos struck. And, you know, that's at the end of the day, if you put yourself in that position, if you put yourself with an opportunity to be thrown onto the bubble, then, you know, I don't know how much griping that you can really have, considering that there's, you know, 36 at-large bids. And, you know, you think about what happened with Oklahoma. They were in a normal year, they're a tournament team. Without what we saw with the five different teams still in bids, I think I'd read there was only two of those that happened over the last 3 years, or maybe it was three that happened over the last 2 years, but not five in 1 year, not five in 1 day almost. But you can always go and look back. I mean, it was probably some tough luck down the stretch of the season with the three guys being hurt, and there's no doubt that's really hard to overcome, especially in this era of college basketball where nobody has any depth. Very few teams can, you know, run out quality guys from on their bench three or four deep. And so when you lose, you know, three guys that have played major roles and maybe even starting positions for the Big 12 tournament, I mean, it puts you behind the eight ball in that game. But the truth of it is Oklahoma had plenty chances throughout the season to hold on to different games that would have cemented their spot in the tournament. You think about the three losses at home, one to Tech, one to Houston, and then one to Kansas. All of those games were infinitely winnable for Oklahoma. Absolutely winnable. And they didn't get it done. And so at the end of the day, That's just the way it goes. Porter Mosier becomes the first Oklahoma head coach since Dave Bliss back in 77 and 78 to miss the tournament 3 years in a row. So that's obviously not a list that you want to be on there. And the questions will continue surrounding him. Now, did he have a team worthy of making the tournament? I think at the end of the day, the answer to that is yes. But since when has Oklahoma been just about only trying to squeeze into the tournament on the bubble or in the play-in? I know nobody wants to really admit this, but Oklahoma has been the better basketball program in this state for going on 30 years. The proof is there. I mean, it's just the truth. But it does feel like at both schools, there is a little bit less passion. There's a little bit more apathy. Part of that is neither team is consistently as good as they were back in those late 90s, early 2000s when Kelvin and Eddie were going at it year after year after year after year. Part of it is the Thunder have burst onto the scene as well. But I don't know if it's ever coming back. I think the heyday for passion in college basketball in the state of Oklahoma is over. I think it's past. Now, if every now and then you got a good team at either school, will people get fired up about it? Absolutely they will. There's no doubt about that. But as far as being there no matter what's happening, those days are over. There's just other things that can be done. And I think with, obviously, at OU, there's always been the focus on football. I think that's been something that Oklahoma State has grown into the last couple of decades to where it's clear that you know, football is king at both schools. I don't know if we could always say that at Oklahoma State, but since, you know, the Holder, Gundy, Boone Pickens trio took the reins of that thing, that it's absolutely been the case. And it's going to stay the case because of how much money and the disparity and really how much the entire athletic departments depend on football and on football for money. And so I guess Oklahoma State did it this week, this at the end of last week, as far as firing Mike Boynton after 7 years. Mosier's 3, none in the tournament. Is that a conversation that needs to be had yet? Maybe that DePaul job would have been a blessing in disguise for OU fans, because it's just not – if there was passion and if somebody cared about it, 3 years in a row not making the tournament would probably be the end of the Porter Mosier era. And I just don't think that's the way it is anymore. I just don't think it is. And so then you end up maybe digging yourself a further hole by not doing what you need to do. There's really no talk about that. There wasn't even leading into the weekend, because Oklahoma had a spot in the field until they didn't. And Jeremy's on the text line. That might be right. The passion for college basketball as a whole may be gone, or definitely dwindled, outside of Lexington, Kentucky, Lawrence, Kansas, Raleigh, North Carolina, or Durham, North Carolina. You know, those handful of places. I think that is exactly right. And until this next couple of weeks, and then that's when everybody will pay attention, and that's when everybody will care, because the tournament itself is so ingrained, and so everybody just loves it. And so for 2 weeks, instead of for 2 months, for 2 weeks, everybody goes back to being a college basketball fan for a little bit. And then as it goes, they realize, man, this isn't that much fun. I remember now why I didn't really watch this all season long. A lot of talk surrounding maybe expansion of the tournament. I was even driving to church yesterday morning hearing this exact conversation. You know, I know Jim Boeheim is kind of out there championing a 96-team field, which to me just seems crazy. Nobody watches the regular season already. How much less does that matter if you expand the field that much? I personally, for me, it's always 64. So even tomorrow and Wednesday, whoever loses those games, which nobody will watch, because it's not a thing yet, and I don't think it's ever going to be. Thursday is the day. Thursday's when the tournament starts in everyone's mind. And so, for me, if you lose tomorrow or Wednesday, you didn't even make the tournament. The tournament starts on Thursday. A lot of other talk with some of the teams that are in that first four. Should they all be mid-majors? Is having Power Five teams in the play-in game, is that acceptable? Should it be just mid-majors? Listen, there's 31 of 68 teams, and I get it. There's already those built-in automatic bids. 32 of them across the country. So you take away the Power Five, which kind of still is, at least for this year in college basketball. So that means 27 mid-major or down teams get automatic bids. The Power Five only have 31 total of the 68. So that means, 37? So 10 of the at-large went to mid-majors. So the argument to me with the first, you know, the play-in games having to be mid-major against mid-major to give them another spot, that falls on deaf ears for me. I think we're past that. I think we're way past that, actually, because the mid-major conferences, I mean, look, the Big East is considered mid-major. They only got three teams in the third, so it's a 1, 2, and 3 seed. You know, you're seeing a lot of people upset that there was only a 3-bid league, with teams like Seton Hall and St. John's and Providence, Villanova shut out. But they're obviously quality at the top, and maybe they do have an argument, considering they have the number one overall seed, a 2 and a 3. Maybe the strength of those three should have been able to carry somebody else in. at least one of those teams on the bubble. But I think as this tournament has gone along and as the parity has started to kind of flow away from those three or four or five blue blood teams, I don't think the argument that, oh gosh, who wants to see a middling team from a power conference instead of a pretty good team from a mid-major? Well, I think we're already to the point where we're about watering down the field anyhow, because now we're seeing middling teams from mid-majors. I mean, the Mountain West got six bids. Are you kidding? The argument that the little guy doesn't get his just due in the NCAA tournament is hilarious at this point, because not only do they, but it's almost overcorrected in that way to where we see, and still being argued, that there should be more, you know, that maybe if you want to talk about merit and all that, but you also, at the same time, this is a TV product. And after Thursday and Friday, no one wants to see some of those teams continue to win. It's when you want to start seeing, as the tournament moves along, give me UConn and Kentucky, and give me Duke and North Carolina or Kansas, and not some of that the smaller. And listen, the ratings play out. They show that's the truth. Everybody was fired up last year about the Final Four being the second highest total seeds in it at 23, behind only 2011, which had a total number of 26. And that Final Four was one of the least watched of all time, because nobody cared to watch San Diego State and FAU. Go back to 2008 when there was four number one seeds. Check out those ratings and see where they are in the hierarchy of all time. It'll be way near the top, because we all want to see the upset. It's cool on Thursday. It's cool on Friday. The little guy taking down the big guy and all that. But once it gets to the next weekend, the Sweet 16, Elite Eight, and then into the Final Four in the national title game, I don't know how much of an appetite there really is for the little guys to be there all the way at the end. That's when we need the blue bloods, and we need the big guys, the teams that you're used to knowing, the teams that you do know. Everyone always wants to see them at the end. Okay. Everything starts tomorrow. Play-in games tomorrow night, Wednesday night, and then full force, the NCAA tournament kicks off on Thursday, tips off on Thursday. Thursday, when we get there, great special. But Boomtown Grill needs to be the March Madness headquarters right here in Elk City. They have got everything. If you're in the mood for a pizza or pasta, look no further than the Boomtown Grill. If you want steak, chicken, seafood, Boomtown Grill. They have great appetizers. I'm a huge fan of their chicken nachos. They're just fantastic chicken nachos that you can have as an appetizer. We've got 11 beers on tap, 30 bottled and canned beers available. There's imports, domestics. They've got some large wine selection, 12 big screen TVs, happy hour from 2 to 6 on Monday through Friday. That is the Boomtown Grill, located at 2103 South Main in Elk City. You can also carry out. 225-3463 is their phone number. Open 11 to 10 on Sunday through Thursday, 11 to 11 on Friday and Saturday. Hanging out here on a Monday following Selection Sunday, it's time to fill out the brackets. And no better place to do that than with us. The Skinny on Sports Western Oklahoma Realty Bracket Challenge. It's on the website at ESPN. I have links to it on our Skinny on Sports Facebook page. I'll repost those throughout the entirety of the first part of this week before everything locks up when the games start on Thursday. It's going to be a great prize pack, $500 to the winner of the Skinny on Sports Bracket Challenge, Western Oklahoma Realty Bracket Challenge, $500 to first, $200 to second, $100 to third. And if I'm feeling hospitable in a couple of Wednesdays from now, Might even be a little Masters something, some kind of little hat or something from the Masters. If I can remember to do that, you just never know. I may get down there and just lose my mind and not even know where I'm at for a couple of hours. But anyway, for sure, the prize pack, $500 for first, $200 for second, $100 for the third place finisher in the Western Oklahoma Realty Skinny on Sports Bracket Challenge, ESPN's website. You can find it. Find a link on our Facebook page. And like I said, I'll continue to post those throughout the week as we head up to the start of the NCAA tournament. All right, so talked about the teams that didn't get in and maybe some other things to change that are possible. Now let's talk about what really happened. So the four regions, I think almost universally last night, depending on it didn't even depend on what show you watched, what talking heads, which ones were up there on the dais. Everyone seemingly agrees that the East region is the toughest of the four, which to me is super interesting because you would think that the region that had the number one overall seed would not be the toughest one just because of the way the S-curve goes and the way they kind of pack the tournament. But everyone thought, I didn't hear anyone even challenge the notion that the East was the hardest region. You look at UConn, defending national champion. They've been fantastic all year long, 31-3. They seem to have everything in an era of college basketball where it's not that way. I mean, I think you can poke holes in each and every other team in this tournament and maybe even massive gaping holes. But UConn, it's hard to kind of find a glaring weakness with the Huskies. And so I would imagine, and I know, you know, Vegas-wise it's the case, and I'm sure – you know, the millions and millions and millions of brackets that get filled out on the ESPN website outside of, you know, of our contest, I would imagine they will be an overwhelming favorite. Maybe, I don't know, a quarter to 30% of the brackets will have UConn winning, something like that would be my guess. And so it is interesting that the general consensus is that they have the hardest region to navigate to get to the Final Four, to get out to Scottsdale to the Final Four. One thing that, you know, committee, I don't know if they do this on purpose. It's hard to believe they don't with some of the matchups that they create. There's all kinds of buzz, obviously, about Nebraska playing A&M in both the men's and women's tournament, seeing how just last week the athletic director at Nebraska, hometown, homegrown Trev Alberts, left the AD job at Nebraska to go to A&M, and now 3 days later, both games for both teams are against each other in the NCAA tournament. But when you look at the top half of that East bracket, it's so interesting that you find three of the four Final Four participants from a year ago. Connecticut is a one seed, FAU is the 8 seed, and then San Diego State at a 5 seed, which is where they came from last year to make the Final Four, and eventually playing in the championship game as a national runner up to the champions that was UConn. And I think another point that was being made a whole bunch was the amount of conference tournament winners that you find in this bracket, and Power Five conference tournaments winners, when you've got the SEC champ as a 4 seed Auburn, the Big Ten champ as the 3 seed Illinois, and then the Big 12 champion, the tournament champions anyway, of Iowa State. And so if you look at it like that, maybe some pedigree on the top of the bracket, with FAU or what have you, then I think that it's easy to see why people consider the East and UConn's road the toughest in the bracket. And so it's kind of hard to argue with that. When you look at the path, let's say So let's compare. If seeds held and Connecticut would play, or all these number one seeds would play the best team possible in their road, like the best seed, Connecticut, everyone's going to start out with what considered a layup, even though we saw maybe last year it wasn't the case with Purdue. But you got Stetson. Then you'd have to play FAU, a Final Four team from a year ago. Then the SEC champ Auburn, then the big or tournament champ Auburn, then the Big 12 tournament champ Iowa State. So that would be their 16-8-4-2 if they played the best seed possible. That's what their road would be. You compare that to Houston, which would be Longwood, a Nebraska team that at that point will have won their only NCAA tournament game ever if they're able to beat A&M. Then you got Duke, who maybe, maybe not. They've been good at times. They've been not so good at times. And then, for me, the weakest two seed of Marquette, especially with the injury to Kolick and how that could possibly derail Marquette's season. So, if for me, Houston's run, at least in the teams that would be the highest seed possible, seems the most doable. The problem there is if they don't end up playing, they've also got in the bottom part of the bracket Kentucky, who I think a lot of people think are dangerous as a three seed with the talent that the Wildcats have. And then another team that I don't know how many people are going to want to play right now, and that's Florida. The Gators sure seem like they're on the right track. So Houston's road, if seeds hold, is probably easier than if they don't. I mean, even that Wisconsin team that we saw play in the Big 10 tournament final yesterday is lurking in a possible Sweet 16 matchup. So on the surface, I think if you're Houston, you're liking where you're at. But if some other teams that are maybe hotter right now than the higher seeded teams win, then things get a little bit interesting. For me, North Carolina is probably next toughest behind UConn. And once again, it's the teams they could play, and then there's some teams that a lot of people like as well. A play-in game first, then they would have Mississippi State as the winner in the 8-9 game. But here's the thing about that. Tom Izzo and Michigan State are the ninth seed in that 8-9 matchup. So that sure seems just right out of the bat, right out of the gates, you play, you know, a team you're going to dominate, and then you go to the round two. Just to get to the Sweet 16, you're already facing Tom Izzo. That seems like a pretty tough chore. An Alabama team that can absolutely score would be the four seed, and then Caleb Love return matchup from Carolina to Arizona, and those two teams would be the one and the two, Arizona versus North Carolina in the West region. So you would think that Arizona would probably have a decided advantage from a crowd standpoint, with Carolina's fans having to travel all the way across the country. So, and oh, by the way, I also think the Carolina is the weakest of the one seed. So I do think UConn's probably a little bit tougher road, but when you consider how good they are versus Carolina being a little weaker and the path they have, for me, as far as just the one seeds getting there, I personally think North Carolina has the hardest road to get there because they're not quite as good as UConn. And their path is almost as tough. And then you get to Purdue. Man, this bracket is awesome. By far my favorite bracket, because in my mind, if there is a chaos bracket this year where we might see a 9, an 11, something crazy like that come out of any of these brackets, I think it's the Midwest. And a big part of it is because of the lack of success for the higher seeds. We all know about Purdue. The last 3 years, they've lost to, what, a 13, a 15, and a 16? I think it was either 13 or 14, and then a 15 and a 16. That's your one seed in the Midwest. We all know about Edie. We all know about all these guys that they've had. But where are they mentally? How can they possibly pull a Virginia? Or can they? Can they pull a Virginia? The Cavaliers 1 year, the first number one seed ever to lose to a 16, turn around the next year, win the national title. Is that where Purdue's headed? Do they have that mental fortitude to do that? I mean, they've got a guy that nobody has with Edie. The guards are a little young, a little bit older this year. Maybe that. I'll just tell you this: you can make the argument for Purdue. I'll let you do that. I ain't doing it. My deal about Purdue is where are they losing before it's the Final Four time. Then you got Tennessee and Rick Barnes. Rick Barnes, not doing it in the tournament. Didn't do it at Texas. Hasn't really done it at Tennessee either. You know, it's funny, though, because Purdue and Tennessee played one of the all-timers a few years back. I think it might have been in the Sweet 16. It was just an unbelievable game that they played. And I think eventually to play Virginia, if I can remember right. Anyway, that was just a great game that those two played. Carson Edwards, a little guard from Purdue, was lighting it up. He was back and forth. It was great. A lot of fun. I don't think there's any way in the world we see that happen again in the Elite Eight. I just don't trust Purdue. It's like the non-trust bracket is what we've got in the Midwest. Then you got Texas. I mean, as juicy as Texas-Tennessee looks on paper, it would be awesome to see. Rick Barnes Bowl. The Rick Barnes second round game to go to the Sweet 16 with his old school and his new school, and both schools' lack of success in the NCAA tournament. Somebody would have to, somebody would have to get to the Sweet 16 out of that one. They couldn't both lose, even though they probably both try. Their little hearts out to lose. You know, Creighton, saw them make a long run last year. Where's KU? Who's going to play for KU? Gonzaga, you know, they've been kind of up and down, look to be trending nicely, and then all of a sudden you can't be lose the conference tournament championship game. So what I'm saying is when you look at the top four or five, even to the sixth seed, South Carolina, chaos, if there is chaos, I think the Midwest bracket is where it's going to come from. I mean, all the way down to, I don't know, Oregon at an 11 seed, just plowed through the Pac-12 tournament. A lot of people love McNeese. McNeese is one of only, I think, four teams that have won 30 games so far. Will Wade and McNeese against the Zags. You know, could TCU prove the Big 12's mettle as a 9 seed and do something with Purdue? They're in the second round. If Purdue can beat, you know, you never know, obviously, with them. But I think, man, you can make a case for a lot of teams in the Midwest. So, that's going to be the most fun one. The matchups are juicy. If seeds hold, obviously, Texas and Tennessee would be greatness. You know, Kansas and Gonzaga looks fun. I just don't think it's going to happen. I think that come Thursday or Friday, or both days, this is where carnage is coming from in your bracket. It's coming from the Midwest. So who has the smoothest path for a number one seed to get to the Final Four? We talked about UConn, we talked about Houston, and UNC, and then Purdue. Honestly, I think it could be Purdue because I think there's going to be carnage. But then who in the world is trusting Purdue? I mean, I think there exists a world where Purdue may just play one single-digit seed. I know listening to the talking heads, people love McNeese against Gonzaga, and then even, heck, against Kansas. Or I think I even heard somebody pick Samford to beat Kansas because of the injuries, but what I'm saying is it's not a normal KU team. And so if you're looking at, like, if you want to decide to trust Purdue, I think they have or will have the easiest path by the time it's all said and done. Because you look at the Boilermakers, they 8 or 9, whoever, that'd be the one single-digit seed, especially if McNeese can pull off upsets to get to the Sweet 16. The one seed playing a 12, and then I'm telling you, Oregon, watch out for Oregon. I don't think it's too crazy to think that you might play 11-seeded Oregon in the Elite Eight. So for me, Purdue has the potentially easiest. And I think even if seeds held throughout the entirety of the Midwest region, I still think it's the smoothest path as well. We see Kansas, the injuries, they haven't been right all year long. It hasn't seemed. There's certainly not a Kansas that scares you to death. Heck, I think a lot of people around the country think the only reason they're a 4 seed is because their name is Kansas. Now, they have beaten high-quality teams. But does that Kansas team even exist anymore with some of the injuries they've had? So, for me, Purdue is the smoothest path, which makes it even that much more intriguing because Purdue is also the most historically wobbly. The most historically wobbly team that has a number one seed. So, with the parity, and especially coming off last year and just the wildness that we saw to get a 2 fives and a 9 into the Final Four, with all that we saw there, I think everyone is probably already, if you've already filled out your bracket or you're about to fill out your bracket, I'm sure that there is the temptation to try to blow your bracket up on purpose. You know what I mean? Like, because, we all think there's more parity in college basketball than there's ever been. And there probably is. I mean, even from the one line, I think if you start rounding up year after year after year, who's the strongest, who's not, this could easily be one of the weakest groups of number one seeds that we've seen. I just have a feeling that it can't happen 2 in a row. Now, they had the stats yesterday, like 14 of the last 15 seasons, a 1, 2, 3, or 4 has lost in the first round, either Thursday or Friday. And then a double-digit seed has made the Sweet 16 like 11 or 12 years in a row. Those are all possible. I don't think there's any doubt those are possible. But, man, are we going to see a 15 beat a 2 and a 16 beat a 1 and everything like we did last year? I personally don't think so. I think it'll be a little bit more chalky this year. And maybe that's quality of the smaller schools, may not quite at the level from the 13 seeds on down. And part of that has to do with they're losing some of their guys. Some guys that probably would have been on their team going into the NCAA tournament this year with the transfer portal and NIL and all that. It's making those teams maybe not quite as dangerous as they were. And so that brings us, if you fill out your bracket, you're thinking about a Final Four. What's your Final Four look like? So last year, in only 5 times, so 1978. In 1978 is when seeding started, like what we know as seeding. Now, there wasn't as many teams back then, but that's when I started putting numbers to seeds. Since then, only 5 times since 1978 has the total number, when you add up the seeds that make the Final Four, been 20 or more. 1980 it happened, 2000 it happened, 2006, 2011, and then last year. 2011, the highest number with a total of 26. 2023, last year, had a total number of 23. 2000 was 22. So with that in mind, if I gave you an over-under, and I said, okay, over-under, the total seeds being 16 for the Final Four this year. So that would basically average out to a 4 seed. Is that too high? Part of me thinks that's a little too high, and I should have said like 12 instead of 16. So let's split the difference. Let's say 14. 14 would be like the whole Final Four being a 3.5 seed. Did you take the over or the under of, at 14 when you add up the seeds, the total number, to reach the Final Four this year? If you're listening just on the last break, we have got our friends from Superior Lawn, Scotty Kelly, back with us. And the perfect time for him to be back with us here as you're starting to look. Green grass is starting to pop out. Obviously, we're seeing the trees start to bloom. Everyone's yard is some shade of blue with getting sprayed already, but that does not mean the job is done. Scott's got granular fertilizer applications. He's got programs for you. A three-step program for the fertilizer application starting in May. A balanced, quick-release formulation to add in green. June and July, higher percentage of nitrogen to slow the release of the formulation and continue for your grass to grow and be healthy and get that deep green color that everybody wants just to prove that you're Mr. Lawn Guy. Who doesn't want to be Mr. Lawn Guy? I do. I always do. Hey, look at my lawn. It looks better than yours. And then there in August and September, lower percentage of nitrogen, potassium to aid in root growth going into the cooler temperatures. Scott Kelly at Superior Lawns, Elk City, Canute, Cheyenne, and Sayre. Give him a call, 580-799-5670. All right, when we come back, we'll step away from the tournament for the last segment of the day. And we will hit the Players' Championship. Interesting that it is tournament time. As we had a text that said, speaking of the mid-majors, that's the way the PGA Tour is starting to feel. I could not agree more, but yesterday was a good step away from that. Don't forget Western Uncle Murilli Bracket Challenge. I'll post the link again on Facebook. That way it'll just take you right to our group. It's going to be a great prize pack. $500 for the winner, $200 for second, $100 for third, and maybe, just maybe, a little extra something from the Masters for some of the winners as well. Speaking of golf, I have not seen the new season of Full Swing on Netflix just yet. I've heard it's fantastic. Haven't really heard anything but that it's great. It's always kind of cool to see the inside of that. I know the quarterback show on Netflix, it was kind of cool to see the weekly grind that those guys have to go through. Watched a bunch of the Kirk Cousins, Pat Mahomes season. Just seeing how beat up even the quarterback, you're not even allowed to hit them anymore, and they still get kind of beat up during the season. It's always cool to see the kind of from behind the scenes. And there's another. Fantastic. We got New Mexico as an 11 seed to make some noise coming in on the text line. Richard Pitino. I wonder if Richard Pitino is a guy we might be looking for some of these open jobs, some of these Power 5 open jobs. So, tournament's going to be a lot of fun. Get your entry in. Western Oklahoma Realty, Skinny on Sports Bracket Challenge. Yesterday, the Players' Championship down at TPC Sawgrass, Ponte Vedra Beach, Florida, wrapped up. And, gosh, maybe for the first time, I guess Hideki Matsuyama and the way he played out at Riviera about a month ago on a Sunday, historically good final round at that old classic golf course at Riviera. You know, maybe you could put that, but this was the first time where it really felt like a battle down the stretch with guys that you knew everybody's name. The beginning of the PGA Tour schedule so far has not produced much drama with the players that you want to see the drama from. You haven't seen Spieth. JT's played pretty well, but not all the way up there battling. You know, Rory's been a total enigma. It feels like he gets embroiled in some sort of rules controversy every single round. Even yesterday from way back on the last hole, he hits it in the water again off the tee on 18, and people are always questioning where he's dropping from. I know Wyndham Clark, there were people questioning his drop on, I think it was 10, when he hit it over the green. And so it almost feels like a lot of that stuff has been starting to be brought up more and more by LIV proponents, more than likely, trying to poke holes in what the PGA Tour is or the players that are the strongest or the most notable on the PGA Tour. But yesterday, you know, Wyndham Clark has become more of a household name. Obviously, winning the U.S. Open and then being able to find a way in round three at Pebble and winning that rain-shortened event, and then he's been right there. I mean, he's a guy, obviously OSU ties will help him here be more notable. But I do think that you've got guys that people know. Xander Schauffele is probably the best player not to win a major on the tour right now. If you had to start naming guys that have had good careers or won some tournaments and just haven't been able to break through, Schauffele is that guy to me, by far the best not to win a major, especially when you start looking at the results that he's had in the majors. Gosh, I think he may have a second in every one of them, but just not able to get over the hump. And so you had basically those three guys. Yeah, Schauffele is a lot like Ricky Fowler without a Players Championship that he could have won yesterday. But, man, the drama was great. You know, Scheffler comes from nowhere, and everybody knows his issues, but also his greatness. And, man, and this is probably a tick too far for Scotty, and he'll have to do it at a longer pay or longer period of time. But I don't think it's out of the realm that when you watch him, when the way he is striking the golf ball right now is early 2000s Tiger-esque. All you have to do is look at the stats. He just blows the field away week after week after week with ball striking. And so now it almost feels like, of course, back-to-back weeks he's made putts. Yesterday, like 25 putts. I mean, he looked yesterday for the first time in a long time where he was over a, I don't know, 10-footer, 15-footer, 5-footer, it didn't matter. It looked like he was going to make it. And more importantly, it looked like he thought he was going to make it. And I wonder if Rory is – I wonder how he feels right about now, because a couple of tournaments back he mentioned, you know, maybe Scotty should try the mallet. Now he has, and he's won twice in a row, like unlocking that secret. I mean, I don't know that Scotty even knows he said it, but either way, it's coincidence is right there that it would happen that way. And so – Scheffler feels a little bit Tiger-y in that if he putts well, he's going to win. He feels that dominant right now because of the way he hits it. And it's not – his ball striking, it hasn't just been kind of a since the first of this season type of stretch. We're talking about a year and a half to 2 years worth of – elite ball striking. And now maybe he's figured out, either confidence wise or whatever the setup is of this other putter. You know, he went to it once and it didn't necessarily solve the problems, but now it sure looks like it has. And just his body language yesterday, every time he was over a putt, it felt like he was going to make it, which has been the exact opposite for him over a bunch of the last year. So heading into Augusta 3 weeks from now, there's no doubt Scottie Scheffler is leaps and bounds the favorite to win that golf tournament. He's won there before. It's a ball striker's paradise. And now he's got the confidence with the putter. Watch out. He's for sure the favorite. And I really don't think it's even all that close. Going in, at least right now, going into Augusta here in a couple of weeks, 3 weeks from Thursday, round one will start down at Augusta National. So, man, it was a great day. A putt from Wyndham Clark. I don't know how it didn't go in. Maybe just a hair hard, but it had to be that hard to stay on the line that it was on. It's kind of lipped out. I think as golfers, we've probably all seen the meme where a guy lips a putt out, and then all of a sudden the finger comes up through the hole that, like, knocks it out of there. That's exactly what it felt like Wyndham Clark's putt did yesterday. He clearly had a chance. Shoffley makes the two bogeys on 14 and 15. Misses the 6.5-footer on 17 after both those guys hit the best shots of any of the leaders by leaps and bounds. Nobody else was within 20 feet, and they both hit it within 6. But Shoffley unable to get that putt to go in, and then couldn't make a birdie on 18 either. And so, once again, Scottie Scheffler just kind of cementing his place atop the world of golf right now. And with just a couple of weeks to go before the season's first major, I think we can all agree that going into the golf tournament, Scottie Scheffler will be the favorite for a second green jacket. And of course, we'll watch him stripe it right down the middle and hit great iron shots. And it'll come down to, can he continue the role with this new putter? And man, yesterday in what most people consider the fifth major, the ones that's just a little bit of a rung below those four iconic golf tournaments. In that setting with that pressure and him knowing the same thing we all do. If I can just make a few putts, I can get back in this and I can win because I'm going to hit the ball better than anybody since Tiger in early 2000s. And that's what he's doing. And if he makes putts, he's going to be extremely, extremely hard to beat going into the Masters. So, man, what a good day. PGA Tour, the only thing they really could have helped that day even more is if Wyndham Clark's putt would have just stayed in, and then we get to see a playoff at Sawgrass. But it didn't happen, and Scottie Scheffler wins for the second straight week and also becomes the only, and this is a mouthful considering the champions that have been throughout the years since back until 1978 at the Players. He's the only guy ever to go back-to-back at the Players Championship. So Scottie Scheffler obviously trending the right way for the Masters, and it was a big day for the PGA Tour after having, you know, a bunch of guys that maybe, you know, Austin Eckroat, yeah, he's from Edmond North. We know him. Most people don't. They really needed to have some star power at so far what their signature event has been, and I think they got it yesterday with a great finish. Fun watch on a golf course that we all know that those last three holes and how many different things can happen. And yesterday, all kinds of stuff happened. And it was great theater all the way until that very last putt that lipped out by Wyndham Clark to give Scheffler the win. So golf, fun stuff. Now we all try to figure out a way to make it through the next 3 weeks before we get to Masters Week. All right, everybody have a great day. Don't forget, sign up. Skinny on Sports Western Oklahoma Realty Bracket Challenge. I'll have that on our Skinny on Sports Facebook page and link right to our group on the ESPN website. We'll continue all kinds of bracket talk throughout the week. Who knows what else will pop up. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great Monday. It's been Skinny on Sports.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.